Eric Zorn joins us now, the publisher of the Picayune Sentinel, the weekly newsletter you can get for free by emailing ericzorn@gmail.com. Eric is part of the Mincing Rascals podcast panel, the podcast for people who care about Chicago. A new episode drops tomorrow. Hi, Eric Zorn. How are you?
I'm caring about Chicago. That's how I am. How are you?
Good. Speaking of episodes, I don't know. Did you watch? Have you been watching White Lotus? We were talking about that series on the show today.
I have not been watching that. No, I am still catching up on Severance.
Ah, yeah. Okay. Fair enough. I won't bother you then with that. What the question will become ultimately, what's the statute? This might be an unpopular opinion for you. What should the statute of limitations be on a show's episode, the ending of it? 24, 72 hours, zero, a year? You know what I mean?
I was still a little annoyed that I knew how The Sopranos was going to end, and I just watched it like 2 years ago. It was like already 20 years old, I think.
Yeah,
well, yeah. No, it's tough in the era of streaming TV. You just don't know what, you know, when people have seen anything. It, you know, so I guess he just sort of never revealed the ending. It's like a book, right? You don't say when you look at like say Scott Turow's book, Presumed Innocent. You wouldn't reveal the ending of that, and that was. What, 35 years ago? Something
well,
like
it was made into a movie, too. I mean, I think
right.
You're right. Books take longer to read, and they're a little more timeless, so you don't need to come up to somebody and ruin it for them. But I think you get to say what happened in Presumed Innocent. I think you, right? Different media have different timelines, but come on, Eric. You're not saying I can't tell you how Presumed Innocent ended.
It's a good question. I admit it's a good question. It's kind of canonical to say that Rosebud is the sled, right? And what movie am I thinking of here? I can't remember the title of it. Oh, Citizen Kane. So, I mean, and that's what, 70 years old, something like that? So I guess certain, well, The Crying Game, I think you're allowed to say by now that in The Crying Game, the woman turns out to be a man.
I fell out of my chair when that happened. Holy cow. I did not see that coming. And Brenda's looking at me going, yeah. I didn't know. I did not know.
Well, the surprise ending that got me was The Sixth Sense, if you remember that.
Sure. All right, did you see that coming, The Sixth Sense? Could you tell us that movie was building, that he's seeing dead people?
I did not. I did not see that coming. And
I didn't either.
And of course, when you go back and rewatch it, you can see it coming easily. That there are a bunch of little clues that are dropped along the way. But no, I was startled by that. And I was really glad that it wasn't spoiled for me.
Likewise. I'll also offer this, though. If you come up to somebody and you see that they're reading a book, you know, and it's a thriller or whatever, and you've read it, the only reason you would tell them about the ending of the book is because you're a show-off. I mean, if we're all in a book club, we're all going to discuss it, but then don't go to the book club. Otherwise, you are more easily insulated from the outcome of a novel that you're reading than you are White Lotus or the Florida-Houston game.
Yeah, the Florida-Houston game. My wife had the women's final ruined for her by her sister. we were saving it to watch. You know, they played the women's NCAA final game on Sunday afternoon, and we had recorded it. We were looking forward to watching it together on Sunday night. And she came downstairs and said, "Oh, Ann just ruined the game for me. She told me who won." I said, "Don't say anything." Although I got to say that the mystery was over by
pretty quick.
The third quarter.
Yeah, that was not a game that the men enjoyed. There almost ought to be a little necklace or bracelet, a universal sign somebody has, and if you see them, you know that means they're in a media quarantine for something, you know, and maybe it would indicate White Lotus or NCAA women's or something, but you know, that way you could further protect yourself from having to hear something you don't want to know.
I got a question for you, John. Do you watch sports on the DVR? Do you have to watch it live?
I watch it live.
Okay.
My cable provider does not offer DVR service. And I said to them, I called the customer support and I said, "Hello, 1978? And they said, "Yeah, we don't do that." I said, "You know that's kind of a thing now." They said, "Yeah, but there is a cable outlet in the back, and you can hook up a VCR or a DVD recorder." And I said, So then I went, "I don't know what I went." But so it forces me to watch shows live.
I couldn't possibly do that. There's in the NCAA men's game, for instance, last night, there were so many commercials. The game went on for so long, and I waited like an hour and a half to start the game and zipped through all the commercials and zipped through halftime.
Oh, nice.
And I still caught up to live action right at the end, which was actually kind of fun. I was watching it live.
That's a feature I have long forgotten about. What is the unpopular opinion that you posted? You always do take on some hard to defend stance in your newsletter, the Picayune Sentinel. What is it this week?
This is one that I submitted. I have readers submit some of them to it. I said that all-star games should just go away, that they're no longer important. They're no longer vital. They're no longer all that interesting. It used to be like when the MLB got together, right? And you'd see stars from the National League and stars from the American League that you'd never seen before. Maybe on Saturday afternoon on NBC's Game of the Week, you might have seen them, but you'd never seen them play, and they'd never played against each other. But now with interleague play and with all the games on MLB.com and ESPN and Fox and all the places you can see games, there's none of the you don't have to go to an all-star game to see the great players play. And the game, of course, the players don't really care that much who wins. And it's the primary absurdity is the NBA all-star game, where they don't play defense. And the score in 2024 was 211-186, which is just nuts. And even the WNBA All-Star game in 2023, it was 143-127. And that total is 34 total points more than the highest combined score in the history of the WNBA. So they're not really trying. So they're just kind of out there horsing around in the gym. Yeah. And it doesn't make any sense for them to get together. And there is still a small risk of injury, especially in basketball. But they don't even play. The NFL Pro Bowl doesn't even play anymore. They flag football.
Well, that makes sense. It's a bad showcase for the sport. I'll grant you that. It's another one of those things, though, that it's not harming you that they do it. You don't have to watch. But it does seem to be, if you were the NBA, would you say this is serving our purpose? Even the slam dunk contest isn't what it used to be. I do think it's a moneymaker. It is seen as a showcase for the league, but it showcases slop is what it showcases, doesn't it?
It seems to, yeah. I have a click poll up. I have about 250 votes, and 77% of people don't care. I usually don't offer the I don't care option.
There you go.
You don't do that in your news click. You don't put I don't care.
Otherwise don't vote. I try and avoid that one for that reason. I try and force people into an opinion.
And I do too. But right now it's 19% of those left over, 19% say dump the All-Star games in favor of skills contests, which are really interesting. I think three-point contest is interesting. And the
three-point shot contest is good. That is fun. Yeah. I like that they put the men up against the women in that too. I'm going to change the subject now. Did you go to one of the rallies on Saturday?
I did. I went down to the Daily Plaza and hung around for about 45 minutes, and then my wife and I and some other friends marched through the loop, holding signs and chanting and doing whatever it is that a protest accomplishes.
It seemed like the memo went out, this is what democracy looks like. Is that what you all were chanting?
That was one of the chants. Hey, hey, ho, ho, Donald Trump has got to go was another one of the chants. I was disappointed there wasn't more music involved. Some singing, perhaps, would have been nice, but
Donald Trump has to go doesn't resonate, I think, with that. Donald Trump's not going to be impeached. But this is what democracy looks like, I thought, was an interesting message, because the message I thought was so multifaceted. Remember, it was organized originally as hands off Social Security, Medicaid, and Medicare. Then the markets tanked. People got mad at Elon Musk and certainly Donald Trump, mostly Donald Trump. And so you had people with all sorts of interests out there just marching in anger or exasperation. At least that's the way I saw the coverage of it. Is that the way you read the room?
Yeah, it was a little diffuse. You're right. There were a lot of different there was certainly in the march in Chicago, there was a pro-Palestinian contingent. There were people marching about health care. There were people marching about immigration. A lot of different causes were represented there. And And it isn't, there wasn't like one message other than that they don't like a lot of the direction that the Trump administration is taking. I got to say, it was the first protest that I've ever participated in, that I didn't do that when I was a kid. And then as soon as I went to work for the Tribune right after college, of course, the Tribune has pretty strong rules about, you know, you can't participate in protests. We couldn't sign political petitions. We couldn't have yard signs. We couldn't have bumper stickers on any car we were going to drive. And I supported all those rules. I think it was important to at least project an air of neutrality, even though, of course, people who read my column could probably guess where I stood on a lot of issues. But it was still...
Is that still the policy over there, do you think, Eric?
Oh, sure it is. Yeah, I think it's that way in almost every newsroom. They don't want you photographed holding a sign or interviewed on TV espousing a point of view, especially if you're a news reporter. And again, you know, you can sometimes tell where people are coming from their social media or other things you can tell about them. But I think it's important not for journalists not to participate in that way.
Yeah, I completely understand that. Yet you were able to write in your newsletter, not the Mincing Rascals, the Picayune Sentinel, "My check from George Soros hasn't arrived yet, but I'm glad I marched on Saturday anyway." Picayune Sentinel, that's a local newsletter. Publisher Eric Zorn, the former Tribune columnist, is on the line. He's a member of the Mincing Rascals podcast panel. We'll drop another episode on Wednesday. I think I might ask the gang what they thought of Mayor Brandon Johnson's request to vendors, businesses the city does business with, to cut their contracts 3% to help the city pay its bills. So that's thinking out of the box. All of the people who you owe money to or that you're going to do business with, ask them to take a 3% haircut. What do you think of that idea, Eric?
Well, I think it's a bad idea because a lot of these vendors, when they made their bids, the contract bids, they make them as good as they can. They want the bid to be as attractive as possible. So they cut their profit margin to the point where they think they're going to get the contract. And if you take away 3%, that may be all the profit they're going to expect out of it. It may be that they would end up taking a loss doing that. And once you make a deal, you made a deal. And, you know, unless there's evidence that some of these contracts are, you know, somehow exorbitant or unfair, I don't think it's the right thing to do because a lot of these contractors are relatively small businesses. And like I say, try that with your credit card company sometime. You just take 3% off what I use. We'll call it square. It's not going to work.
We think that's a great idea, said No Businesses in the reporting on this. I mean, the whole trade associations, unions, and individual businesses are like, no, we're not going to do that. It does. It did make me think a little bit the application of this to what happens if tariffs go in place. Say there's a 25% tariff on a good coming into the United States. Will the price go up 25%, or will that manufacturer say, okay, I'm going to make less money today, but I'm not going to pass the 25% tariff on to the consumer? They won't pay for it. Then I won't sell the good at all. So I have to make less money. Now, that might hurt your stock price, and that hurts a lot of people in many different ways down the line. But it makes you think about, is there 3% built into that product? And maybe you guys would help us out and help yourself out if you just took 3% less. What do you think of that?
Well, the tariff question is very interesting because, you know, if a company has to hike its price by 25%, their sales are going to go down. So they may have to, I mean, there's probably some fancy arithmetic that gets done where they got to figure out, okay, we have to raise our prices some, but we can't raise it too much because if it costs us sales, then we're going to lose even more money that way. So it's very complicated. I mean, I'm not by any means an economist, so I don't know. I'm just listening to what all the experts are saying, which is that there's almost no way that prices aren't going to go up on all kinds of goods, even ones that are basically made in America, even like automobiles that are made in America, use a lot of parts that are imported from foreign countries. And so it's not as simple as saying, well, American manufacturers are going to make out like bandits and people who are overseas are going to pay the price. The consumers are going to pay the price. And again, if you ask a business that's doing business with Chicago to take a 3% haircut and they're doing business with other entities, they may have to raise their prices on those other entities, which could, again, get passed along to consumers. So it's not an easy situation.
You know, I'd like to be hopeful about this, and I think I annoy family, friends, listeners, and experts that come on this show, and I try and see through the fog of what the president is doing. But I will confess to you that my arguments would be made a lot easier if I could find some people that would say that outside of the administration. So, Peter, and by the way, the administration's sort of infighting now, Elon Musk, Peter Navarro, et cetera. But it would be nice if a whole raft of economists from the University of Chicago said, well, there's a lane here and we need to stick with it. And maybe that will bear fruit. Individual nations are now starting to, it sounds like, negotiate with the president. So maybe that's the plan, but it would just be a lot easier to have faith in it. If there was a story in the Daily today that the economist from the University of Chicago is the essential author of that big chart the president held up in the Rose Garden. And he is quoted as saying, no, that's not what I had in mind. Even that guy who came up with some of those numbers in that chart said, no, that's not what we had in mind. One last email from one of our listeners, a text message. John, do you think these marches included any new people besides the other 50% that did not vote for Donald Trump? The reason I ask is, if you're not bringing new people to the table, or in this case, the march, you're chasing your own tail, doing the same thing with and expecting different results. I think that's true, or I think that should be a political concern for Democrats, don't you?
Yeah, I do, and I think it's important that they not just have this be a one-day event, that if you look at protests throughout history that have been somewhat successful, they are sustained. They are every week or every, you know, sometimes every day, where people are showing that they're committed and determined. It's not that hard to go out on a Saturday afternoon and walk for a mile around the loop. It is hard to sustain a public effort like that. And I'm hoping that this is just the beginning of people showing that they're back up on their hind legs and they want a different response from the administration.
I think if the market stays down, the numbers go up. I think if the market goes up, the numbers go down. We'll see. I'll talk to you tomorrow on the Mincing Rascals podcast, Eric Zorn.
Thanks, John. It'll be fun.